Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Celeste Simpson will be giving us an update her hopes for the disabilities work in 2021. So with the area in lockdown and all the restrictions, how have you been dealing with the whole mental health aspect of the situation?
I've been okay. I'm kind of used to it anyway. I didn't really go anywhere before. I've just kind of been at home with school and I'm not in Windsor right now. I'm with my family, so at least I have that part. If I were in Windsor, it would probably be a little bit harder because I wouldn't have them. So I'm doing okay right now. It's definitely a little more difficult this time around, not being able to leave my town. That's a little bit of a newer thing, but for the most part, I'm doing okay.
So have you seen any accessibility challenges in all this?
Not around here, but I'm not going out very much, but I could see where there definitely could be in terms of having to go out and get, you know, the necessities with everything going on. Like it might not be safe in one sense, they might not be able to get to where they need to go. Because of that, and then certain things being in lockdown and not open might be an issue as well. So I could definitely see where there could be. I don't really have a lot of, I haven't seen a lot of it around here, but I'm sure it's happening for sure.
So can you take me through some of the highlights of your disabilities work at the U from 2020, and then a little of your hopes for 2021?
Yeah, so we definitely lucked out before the semester ended last year, like in March. We were able to get our gala in, so that was good. We got to bring the community together with that one last time before everything shut down. And then in our first semester this year, we were able to do a couple of things. We held an event with one of our organizations that we work with, Roots to Wings. We did pumpkin decorating with them over Zoom, so we gave them all the supplies and just Zoom called them, and we all decorated together. It was very cute. It was very fun. We also did wellness packages just to kind of raise some money as well, and, you know, try to improve like students' mental health and self-care around finals and stuff, so that was also good. Made some money with that, and I'm hoping now that we're kind of used to the like online format that we'll be able to do a lot more this year than last semester. We have some ideas for events that we could do. We're gonna try to do a virtual spread the word to end the word this semester because that's one of our bigger events for the winter semester. So hopefully we'll be able to figure all that out and it'll be a success. And then we just have like a couple small things as well. We don't want to go too big because, you know, we're still adjusting to the online. But now that we're getting a little bit more used to it, I'm excited for the semester and its events. So
do you find that students with disabilities typically have the technological resources to engage in events such as those and to be able to participate fully in the classroom material since everything switched to online?
As in like university students or like the people that we're working with? Or just in general, I guess.
A little of both.
Okay. Well, with Roots to Wings, that one, they had, like, resources at the center for them to use as for students. I guess that depends. Like, some might have to have it anyway because of, you know, like, their learning habits. They might have to have it, but some might not. So that could also be an issue. I know that's something that we've talked about in some of my, like, classes and stuff that, some might have it anyway, and this might just be easier for people with disabilities, but also some might not, and, you know, getting that technology could be an issue financially or in any other sense, so I don't know. No matter what, I feel like it'd be a hard adjustment, but some might find it a little bit easier and might already have those resources, but I think it's a little bit of both sides. Like, some already have it, some don't, and it kind of just depends on the situation.
So, when you mention things like increased mental health through some of these events, why do you think that's a key area of focus?
I think it's a key area of focus just because, like, these are hard times for everybody, you know, like businesses are closing down, stores are closing down, people aren't able to work, people aren't able to go into work, and then I feel like, especially for people with disabilities, like, it might be a health risk to, like, you know, work or go out or whatever, so I feel like it's affecting people's mental health quite intensely, especially now, because now it's been almost a year of this, and I mean, there was a little bit more freedom in the summer months, although probably shouldn't have been, but there definitely was. But like now that it's a little bit more strict and getting kind of worse at this point, I feel like it's really affecting some people's mental health for sure. So I think it should remain an important focus. I know right from the start, I was always seeing like ads and stuff for mental health because it's so isolating too. Like, that's the big part of it, is like everybody's so isolated from everyone else, especially in areas where it's strict, especially now. So I feel like it's an important thing to focus on.
So if you could send any message to all those out there who might be struggling during these times with a disability or without, what would you say?
I would just say, you know, reach out to your friends, your family, whoever you feel close to, you know, talk to them about how you're feeling. I know that can be a hard thing to do, and, you know, I struggle with myself, but that's definitely what I'm doing. I'm reaching out to those I care about, talking to them, you know, making sure they're good too. You know, just keep talking to people. I know it's hard in these times, but, you know, phone calls, thank God for technology and stuff, you know, those are definitely helpful in these times. So, I just say, you know, keep talking to people, you know, let them know how you're feeling, you know, that support that you need.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
In this segment of our show, we'll be chatting with para-archery coach Duncan Crawford. So tell me a little bit about your experiences coaching athletes with disabilities.
Well, I've had the opportunity right from a young age. I was in Nova Scotia, competed in archery there, and we had a couple wheelchair archers on our team. So I had great insight that way and had an awesome opportunity to really experience at a pretty close range. You know, the challenges, we'd get to shoots and there'd be no consideration for accessibility for a wheelchair archer to compete in the sport of archery. So, you know, we'd literally have to lift athletes onto the field and move their chairs. And so, but again, that was just helping a teammate. We never gave it any real thought, I don't think. They traveled with us, so we did what we had to do to get them in and out of their hotel rooms and onto and off the go. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just wondering, I'm guessing when the work began, accessible equipment was kind of at a minimum.
Yeah, I would say archery-specific accessible equipment. You just had to be innovative. Generally, most archers, even para-archers, use stock equipment with anywhere from minimal to significant modifications. You know, in an official coaching capacity, I took the job as the head coach of the National Paralympic Archery Team about 3 years ago, and you know, it was a good fit right out of the gate. I have one athlete who lost his arm in an accident, so you know, he built himself a shoulder brace and a release system that he triggers with his chin, and most the top archers in the world are now shooting some variation of that equipment that he's created. I have wheelchair archers. I have archers who have lost, you know, lower limbs, various digits on their hands, congenital birth defects where, you know, somebody's missing an appendage or part of a limb. You know, some archers, I have one lady who is double amp above knee, so, or pardon me, below knee, so she shoots on blades. So we had to build her a custom seat to stabilize her, and one of our longtime athletes, she also shoots with a seat. You know, coaching with the national team was incredible because you get to travel the world and see the adaptations that archers are using all over the world. Some of them are super sophisticated and some are very, very simple.
So what are some of the key challenges in tailoring some of this custom equipment to an athlete?
Well, you can't just go into any bow shop. That's the challenge. Like, the one athlete I referred to who's built a lot of releases for fellow athletes, Kevin, he's in southern BC. So oftentimes he'll be at a tournament, he'll measure an archer, take pictures, you know, basically come home, build the apparatus, and he may not see that archer again until they get back together to compete at the next major international contest. In some cases, he can send it out and they can, you know, get to work on it, and hopefully they have a coach and some people that can help them, you know, whether it be a prosthetist or an occupational therapist or somebody that can, you know, work with the equipment provided. Other challenges, you know, travel. If we're flying to the Middle East, that's, you know, 30, 40 hours of travel. That's not really great for, you know, a wheelchair athlete just to be sitting. It's not good for anybody to be sitting that long. But, yeah, nutrition can be a challenge, certain countries. And, you know, so we have to think ahead on all these fronts when planning.
So, in that sense, how does the global stage respond to these athletes? I mean, you've seen different parts of the world, and what's the most common reaction to seeing an athlete with a disability coming in and still putting on a great show?
It really varies. So our top-level para-athletes in the world are shooting at a level very close to those of their able-bodied counterparts. So it's not like there's this big gap between the two. In fact, two of our top-level national team athletes have made the able-bodied national team as well. So that gives you a sense that, you know, they're neck and neck, quite literally. In terms of global response, it's really pretty amazing. I was stunned, actually. We had a big tournament last year in Dubai. It's called the FAZZA, F-A-Z-Z-A. And they have, like, the preparation that they've done is unbelievable. They call it the, it's like the multi-sport facility for people with determination. So I don't even call it with disabilities or anything else. They literally have a hotel and a shopping mall dedicated for para athletes to come in and train, and they have dedicated accessible mini buses that pick you up from there, take you to this venue that accommodates track and field, archery, weightlifting, I believe swimming. There's like 7 sports that train there now. I mean, it's truly world class. Nothing's left to, you know, chance. Like, it's just unbelievable. Then you get to, you know, some of the older cities in Europe that host major events, and, you know, they really roll out the carpet to accommodate para athletes. Unfortunately, you know, you just can't in all situations. There's cobblestone roads and narrow streets and old hotels that just don't have elevators. So athletes have to bum up and down the stairs, or we lift them, or, you know, if we're very fortunate, we'll get them on the first floor. So huge, huge spectrum of how people plan and prepare for para athletes. World Archery really considers all this when they're picking venues. But at the end of the day, if only one or two cities bid for a major international event, the big items on accessibility are typically covered. But, you know, sometimes things are left to be desired.
So, in your time coaching the sport, has there been any individual success story that stands out for you?
Oh, goodness, yeah. As a coach, I've been very, very lucky, fortunate. I don't know what you necessarily want to call it, but both on the able-bodied side, I've had athletes win world youth medals at world championships and things like this. On the para side, again, we've only been together for a couple competition seasons, but we've won, you know, obviously tons of domestic and national medals. We've had athletes go, you know, first and second at world ranking events in the U.S. We had Pan Am Championships in Medellin, Colombia, where both of our top level senior team athletes medaled. So yeah, right now, and now we're into the thick of qualifying for Tokyo and hopefully going to Tokyo. So really, you know, I feel as a coach, I've been present for athletes winning every possible medal at every level, with the exception of an Olympic or Paralympic medal.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from disability student advocate Celeste Simpson, and we heard a little bit about para archery from Duncan Crawford. In this segment of our show, Guatemoc Flores will be telling us a little bit about his experiences coaching all abilities soccer. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with all abilities soccer.
Yeah, sure. I joined as a volunteer back in, I want to say, 2017, maybe 2016. it was through my own experience as a para athlete that I came across them. And first year as a volunteer, and once they found out who I was as a para athlete, they're like, "Oh my God, we gotta get you as a coach." So they did some excessive training with me on how to go about with programming and coaching. So they took me on board right away, took me under their wing, and I became an assistant coach and eventually became a head coach after several years. It's been an amazing experience working with these kids, seeing how they develop. I mean, firsthand, it's hard for us to recognize, but parents or other coaches who come by once in a while, they see the progression we've made with some of our kids. And it's just an awesome opportunity to be a part of.
So, can you take me through a little bit of your own experience as a para-athlete?
Yeah, sure. Well, I kind of fell into it. I grew up healthy. I was diagnosed with a brain condition, a brain tumor, cancer. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, grew up, did the entire cancer protocol, radiation, chemo, and then it was back in 2015, I was on vacation with my family. We came across the Para Pan Am Games that was hosted here by Toronto, I believe, for Ottawa. We hosted the games and saw a news article of one of the athletes who had a concussion and he was eligible to compete. So my parents thought I would be eligible to compete and represent Canada. So I contacted the head coach, took me out to a training session, and the rest is history. I competed in two major world events, trained consistently with the team, and it's been an amazing experience just being able to represent your country.
So, do you find that being involved in sport helped you cope with the diagnosis you mentioned earlier?
100%. I grew up playing competitive soccer my entire life until I got cancer, and it sent me back very, very much so. It was very hard to cope from a kid who used to run for fun to not being able to stand up for more than 10 seconds. It was devastating. My body became so weak. So all I wanted to do was to get back on the pitch, get back on the field, to join my teammates. So yeah, sport, soccer in specific, was major aspect of my recovery. We incorporated that into my physiotherapy, and although those days made me cry because I saw how weak I was, step by step, I got better. So sport in specific, it's what motivated me to become better and to do more.
So have you used those lessons you learned in your own recovery to encourage the kids of the All Abilities program?
Yeah, 100%. I always tell them that seeing you guys come out to the field, it motivates me to be a better person. You guys motivate me. They always say, "Coach T, you're an inspiration." I'm like, no, it's these kids. I've coached for many years. I've able-bodied and accessible sport. Able-bodied children are most of the time are forced to attend these practices in these sessions. When I switch to All Abilities, the kids want to be there. They want to be a part of the program. They want to just have fun. And I take nothing for granted. These kids take nothing for granted. So seeing them come out onto the field really inspires me to do more and represent them on the national stage.
So are there any challenges in coaching All Abilities?
Definitely. Being on both aspects of able-bodied and para sport, one of the biggest things I would have to say is patience. Because for certain athletes, it's hard for them to comprehend certain activities or drills. So it's just having that patience and that motivation to just always be there, guide them through the way, every step of the way. It's not for everyone. It's definitely a challenge, but I feel as if someone was brand new to the coaching of accessible sport, as long as they can develop some patience and some motivation, some extra motivation for these kids, they will be phenomenal coaches. It will be great.
So, in your time coaching and with para sports yourself, has there been any success story stands out for you?
Yeah. When I joined as a volunteer. There's this one at the, his name was Jacob. I want to say his last name, Sweetman. I believe, I forget what diagnosis he had, but he stood out to me. He was very enthusiastic about being there and being a part of the program. So I kept my eye on him. I kind of pushed him a bit more than some of the other kids because he reminded me out of myself. Through the years, he became more and more advanced in his technique, and his enthusiasm for the sport grew. So I reached out to my own head coach at the national team and said, "Hey, I know this this kid, Jacob. I coach him at the Pickering All Abilities program. I think he's a great addition to your squad. Would you be interested in taking a peek at him and maybe being a part of the national team?" And he did. To this day, I believe he's attended 2 or 3 major camps for the national team. Although he hasn't been called for any major competition, he's so young, and he's a developing athlete. So, yeah, that's a great success story that comes to mind.
So, if you could send any message to all those out there who might be wondering if they still have a contribution to make in sport on account of their own diagnosis, what would you tell them to get them motivated?
One thing I've always told people in general, able-bodied or not, is nothing comes, how do I phrase it? Nothing is without faith and work. Whether that's faith in a higher being, but most importantly, faith in yourself. Faith that you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. I know it's kind of silly to say, but if I can do it, you can do it. Nothing comes to mind. I mean, I see these kids come out every single day. Knowing anyone, they can achieve whatever they want to be. But with that said, it's not just within faith and think, okay, I can do it, I can do it. We have to start saying, I will do it. And that's where the work comes in. Whether it's soccer, dance, arts, whatever motivates you, you have to be willing to put in the work to achieve the next step. There will always be a mountain to get up to, a mountain to climb. So, yes, you need to have faith within yourself that you can achieve these goals, but you have to start saying, I will achieve these goals, and start putting in the work. And we can't just sit there and say, yeah, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be this, without actually putting in the work. So whether that's practice, just know that little by little, progression is progression. Whether it's a big jump or if it's a small step forward, you're progressing towards your goal. And just have faith that you will get there one day as long as you're able to put in the work towards it.
So I've heard that Pickering's going to start a virtual speaker series in the near future. Hopefully that has the effect of motivating some of these athletes.
For sure. Yeah, Tammy and I are in talks of trying to name the show, but we're excited. We have some incredible guest speakers that have already shown interest in participating in that, so we're excited to get forward with that.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. Take your time.
My friends, the truth is, whether it be in sport or just day-to-day life, there's nothing a person with a disability can't achieve that an able-bodied person can if given the right tools, the right opportunities, and the right timing. But also it comes down to a question of motivation. Are we going to allow the myths and the doubts that enter our minds about what we're told we can't do rule over us? If the answer is no, and we can find strength and determination, we can and will create, maybe even surprise someone along the way. But the best reason of all for anyone with a disability or without to achieve anything is because they're driven to do so. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.